This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Yes, we're going to talk about prayers for those people. We're going to talk why the communists are grabbing guns. We're going to talk to Chip Roy about our new speaker in foreign policy matters. All that and so much more is coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's do this right off the top. It's something we try to tell you often, but I understand we always have new viewers and we love that. So let's just keep everyone up to date how we do things here on I'm Right. We have made this decision as a staff a long time ago, and it's never going to change. We don't do mass shooting TV. I know that's very common. Whatever the big headline is, everybody will pursue it and they'll put all the pictures up and the crying and the stories and things like that. We don't do mass shooting TV, no matter what, under any circumstances. And we don't do that for one very specific reason. When something horrible happens, like happened in Maine, people, real people, not just faces and names you see on TV or I read about in an article, real people in that moment are experiencing the worst moment of their entire lives, and they'll never have another moment as horrible as that moment, right? That phone call, that visit from the police, hey, your daughter's never coming home again, hey, your husband's gone. Like, who could imagine that? And so right now, whenever there's a tragedy, how a nation should operate is everybody comes together, supports those people, prays for those people, gets behind them, and just picks them up. That's how a nation should be. That is how our nation used to be, by the way, before the communists chose to start doing what they do in the wake of a mass shooting. But that's how our country should be. That's the kind of country I want to live in. And so, no, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to politic off it. I'm not going to do anything except tell you, please pray, because there are real people dead and there are real loved ones suffering in ways that are unimaginable right now. Pray for them. And also, this is important. It's important we understand why the communists do what they do in the wake of a mass shooting. It's really, really important everybody is aware why these people do this every time.
Gun violence has terrorized and traumatized so many of our communities in this country. And let us be clear, it does not have to be this way, as our friends in Australia have demonstrated.
They're just the most evil people, man. They try to take advantage of everybody's emotions. And what they do is they deny this country the ability to come together. This is why we're so divided now. Things like that are exactly why. We can't possibly come together, because when horrible things happen and there's an opportunity for us to just come together and just be human and just be Americans and just be sad and pray and support each other, they can't help themselves. Because they're all demons, everything is an opportunity. Everything. Even death. Everything is just an opportunity for more power. Everything. And it's hard to imagine that there are people like this, let alone people that lead the country, that they're like this. But unless you accept that, you can't ever take these people on. When you hear about, see about some horrible tragedy like a shooting, and your heart is breaking for the families and the kids and the women, and when you're going through those things, these people don't feel any of that. They feel glee at the opportunity to once again try to disarm you. That's what they feel. And I just want to note before we move on, and we're going to get to Chip Roy and other things, before we move on, I just want to note that she points out that that's what Australia has accomplished. The same Australia that had COVID concentration camps where they forced their own citizens. So no, don't. No matter what, you will not be having any of my guns. Enough of that stuff now. Mike Johnson is the new Speaker of the House. Here he was with a portion of his victory speech.
Just to take good care of it. I want to tell all my colleagues here what I told the Republicans in that room last night. I don't believe there are any coincidences in a matter like this. I believe that Scripture, the Bible, is very clear that God is the one that raises up those in authority. He raised up each of you, all of us. And I believe that God has ordained and allowed each one of us to be brought here for this specific moment in this time. This is my belief. I believe that each one of us has a huge responsibility today to use the gifts that God has given us to serve the extraordinary people of this great country, and they deserve it.
Wow. Somebody talking about God on the House floor. How unbelievably refreshing. But let's find out what to make of this Mike Johnson, who actually we've interviewed a couple times on the show and actually I like. Joining me now, Congressman Chip Roy, who will shoot us straight, one of the good ones there. Okay, Chip, we have a new speaker, and obviously he's not the savior of the Republic, and he's far from perfect. Nobody is, but he looks to me to be the best speaker I've had in my 42 years. Am I wrong?
Well, first of all, great to be on, Jesse. And look, Mike Johnson is one of the good guys. Let's be very clear. He's a good friend. When he was giving that speech from the rostrum, he gave that speech basically the night before to the Republican conference with no notes. He did it impromptu. He did it from his heart because that's who he is. And let's be very clear. Before that, when Elise Stefanik was introducing Mike and she referenced In God We Trust right above the speaker's chair, not one of our Democratic colleagues, to the best of my knowledge, certainly the vast majority of them, did not stand up when we all stood up to applaud the recognition that our nation has as our motto, In God We Trust. Mike believes it. Mike understands that we are endowed by our Creator with these unalienable rights, and he understands that we're all here for a brief time, and we owe our allegiance to our Lord, and that we operate under a constitution. And we owe our allegiance to our constituents, not to the power brokers of Washington, D.C. And that's what happened this week, Jesse. The backbone of the establishment and the power brokers in this town were crushed this week. That's important. Now, the real work began, and it's hard. We got a razor-thin majority. Even today, we're trying to figure out how to move a bill through the floor, and it's very difficult to do because the big spending machine and the powers that be in this town want to keep spending the status quo. I have Republicans who just opposed a bunch of our great amendments, cutting spending and cutting all of the woke Green New Deal garbage at the Department of Energy. And scores of Republicans were voting against our amendment. That's what Mike Johnson has inherited. This process of cleaning out the swamp is taking a while, but we're winning day by day, bit by bit. I'm just asking the American people to be patient while we try to slay the dragon in real time.
Yeah. Yeah, look, you can do what you can do. Let's talk about those big spending Democrats and big spending loser Republicans. Obviously, I know you're well aware of it, Chip. It's something you talk about often. The debt situation, it's gone from just this thing nobody wants to talk about to being something that's putting our nation at risk. $600 billion in 1 month in new debt. The fiscal collapse is upon us. Is it that the people in D.C. don't know the fiscal collapse is upon us? Or is it nobody wants to be the guy who has to clean things up after he just wants to party?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, look, what you have is a bunch of Republicans who come up here and they say they're going to balance the budget and they're going to cut spending. And they sit in a room and they preach to you about what's possible. You have to understand what the art of the possible is, Chip. We can't go hog wild crazy cutting these programs. We can't do that or people are going to lose votes next year in the election. Let me tell you what's going to cost Republicans votes. It's not doing what we said we would do. It's not balancing the budget. It's not securing the border. It's not holding this administration accountable. That's what will cost Republicans. But more important than that, it will cost our country. We are losing our country by the day, Jesse. $33.5 trillion of debt, $2 trillion in deficit spending this year. And I go to the floor last night. I offered an amendment to cut another $2 billion from a ridiculous department of, I don't even know what it's called, energy and efficiency or some claptrap over at the Department of Energy that is designed to continue to perpetuate Green New Deal garbage, like making sure we're all gonna be driving electric vehicles by 2050 for zero carbon, whatever the hell their nonsense is. And I got Republicans who voted against that amendment. I only got 131 votes. So look, that's what we're fighting against. So we're going to keep fighting it. We're going to keep highlighting it. Remember the difference. A year ago, we weren't having those amendments. All behind closed doors, they were just cooking up these deals. Now we're putting those amendments out there. Now all of those Republicans, they have to vote. And guess what? They don't like it. They don't like all that transparency. So now we're going to keep pushing full steam ahead. But look, we've got a lot we've got to do. And it starts with right now, the Senate wants to jam us, including Republicans, with this massive omnibus supplemental with Israel, but Ukraine, Taiwan, and a bunch of border money that will just process more people rather than securing the border. And we Republicans must stand united, tell the Senate, Republicans and Democrats and the president to pound sand, that we're going to send you an Israel bill, an Israel only, and it's going to be paid for, fully paid for. And then step two, we get our appropriations bills passed over the next couple of weeks. Step three, we then sit down and say, you want to fund government? It's going to be under these terms. Step four, you want Ukraine? Don't even come talk to me about Ukraine unless it's transparent. You have a plan to show me what you're going to accomplish. We know how every dollar's already been spent and accounted for. And oh, guess what? HR 2 is signed into law and our border is secure. That's what Republicans should do if you want to push back and energize the American people to change this country.
I understand he's the speaker and that's powerful, but he is one man. Is Mike Johnson going to be able to hold the line with such a razor thin majority on any of that? I know that's what you want, Chip. I understand that. I know that's what I want. How much can he actually do? Can he get it done?
Well, if anybody can, I think Mike is maybe uniquely situated right now to do it. He is well-liked across the conference. He is a conservative in his core. You know, our voting records don't match, but, you know, they don't always have to match. The problem is I know who he is as a human. I know what he believes. I know he's committed to our founding principles. I know he believes in limited government. I know he follows and believes in the Constitution. And most importantly, I know that he believes in God and that Jesus is his Lord and Savior. These are the things that I know about him. And you know what? That matters. Those things matter. And so we're going to keep working together to figure out how to force this conference to do what it said it would do when they all campaigned. And I can't promise what Mike will be able to do. I can't promise what I'll be able to do. You know what? We only have our votes. We are 1/435th of 1/2 of 1/3 of the federal government. But we are going to do everything we can with that election certificate. And I think Mike will do a good job trying to bring us together. But we're going to just keep fighting with what we got. I can promise you we will get no help from Democrats. Anybody watching this, let me be very clear. If you believe in limited government, if you believe in secure borders, if you believe in balancing the budget, if you believe in a sovereign America, if you believe in American exceptionalism, you're not getting a single vote out of Democrats. And you should remember that when you go to the polls, and you should remember that when you're holding us accountable to manage through the mess that, frankly, the American people have created by empowering these fools to be given power.
Amen. Chip, go get him. I appreciate you, bud.
Thanks, brother.
You bet. All right. Let's talk to Breonna Lyman next about this Mike Johnson. She's very familiar with him. Look, we've interviewed him before on this show, and I like him, right? I like him. You know I don't fall in love with politicians. It's not what I do. None of them. But I like him. Let's hear what Breonna has to say. Before we get to her, let's get to this. Let's get to how we eat, how you eat, how I eat. Do you know that I love crappy white trash food? Because that's who I am. If I could, on full disclosure, I would probably eat 3 meals a day at Jack in the Box. I would. Why don't I do that? There's no nutrition in it. I can't do that. I would die. Well, we essentially take our dogs to Jack in the Box 3 times a day when we give them dog food. Dog food is dead. It's empty calories. There's nothing in it, just like that Jack in the Box cheeseburger. If you want your dog to live longer and live healthier, fewer visits to the vet, it fixed my dog's digestive issues, give your dog Rough Greens, actual real nutrition. Pour it on your dog's food. You don't have to change food. It's a nutritional supplement. You pour on the food. Your dog will live longer and better. Call them. Free Jumpstart trial bags, 833-33-MY-DOG or roughgreens.com/Jesse. I'll be back.
No, I think he is a person who's hard to demonize. You know, it's very easy to demonize somebody like a Jim Jordan, who's a firebrand. He's out there, he's fighting, and then Donald Trump can demonize an Emmer because he didn't believe the election was rigged. But you have this kind of, I don't want to use the word milquetoast, that's not quite the right word. He is hugely conservative, but he doesn't wear it on his sleeve all the time. So he can get along with moderates and listen to them. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Ukraine aid, for example. But, you know, he's not the devil incarnate.
She sounds disappointed, doesn't she? Joining me now, the host of The Brink. She's also a reporter with The Daily Caller, Brianna Lyman. Okay, Brianna, for people who aren't as familiar with Mike Johnson, I actually hate all these people, but I do like Mike. That's why we bring him on. I think he's a good dude. What are we supposed to expect from this guy?
Well, I think we can expect election integrity, someone that will hold the government to account, because one of the big points of contention, at least for John King of CNN, who was showing his disappointment yesterday very heavily, and MSNBC and the Washington Post with their coverage of this, is that this is a man who they are scared of. So back in 2020, you know, Mike Johnson, he did help lead the effort to try and question the outcome of the 2020 election. And he didn't do it by just saying the election was stolen, right? You know, he didn't sound crazy. He was making a very real point in that there were states like Pennsylvania, for example, in which non-elected officials like the Secretary of State, Kathy Buchbar, usurped the authority of the legislature, changed the election laws without going through the elected officials, which violated the state laws, and changed how the election was supposed to be run. That's a very legitimate question to have. It's questions that Republicans did rightly have in 2020. And now Democrats, especially in the left-wing media, MSNBC, they worry that he is a threat to the 2024 election, to democracy. We've heard that he's Jim Jordan with the jacket on because he's that scary.
Jim Jordan with a jacket on. I actually like that one. Okay, you know what? Let's move on past Mike Johnson and talk about some other things. Our media, I think about this a lot now, how truly evil and deceptive they are. You look at things like that hospital in Gaza. You look at how they get stories, quote, wrong, meaning they lie all the time. And we have war drums beating in this country. How in the world would this country even operate in a real war with a media like this? We couldn't possibly do it.
No, I mean, if we were operating in a, God forbid, in a war right now with media, the United States would be the first to go out, because somehow our media would manage to convince the idiots in America that the United States is the problem, because that's what they have done thus far with Israel, right? So CNN, they issue this correction very quietly, mind you. It's at the bottom of a very long article. You'd have to really want to read this article to get there. But they said, look, we didn't do our due diligence, right? And this type of knee-jerk reporting has very grave consequences. It was, you know, the New York Times, it was the Washington Post, CNN, even the Wall Street Journal, who I think a lot of people tend to view as more conservative. They said Israel bombed a hospital, according to Palestinian officials. The fact that they called Hamas authorities, Palestinian officials, to try and almost, you know, run cover for them in the middle of a very intense war is shameful. And when we worry about whether the United States will get involved with war, you know, think of the real life consequences of this reporting. Domestically, Rashida Tlaib is crying about something that did not happen the way it was supposed to have happened, according to her. And worldwide, we saw the Beirut embassy being attacked. We saw these protests spring up in Iran and Palestine that was not only anti-Israel, but anti-America. And it is because of the media's deception.
As we've seen, obviously, that horrible shooting in Maine last night, and again, prayers for everybody involved. Our domestic enemies have not stopped trying to disarm us. They will attempt this no matter what happens. Everything's an excuse to make sure you can't defend yourself, I can't defend myself. And we just got kind of a little shot in the jaw from the Supreme Court. What happened there?
Oh, God. This is actually really upsetting, and I'm going to quote Thomas Jefferson when we talk about it. But so basically, back in 2021, Missouri had passed a law that would essentially fine officials or police officers if they enforce federal gun laws. And what the Supreme Court decided, because Missouri said, hey, look, can we issue a stay so that we can continue to essentially allow Americans to have their Second Amendment freedom? Well, this is decided by the court. And the Supreme Court, except for Clarence Thomas, said, no, these laws can stay in place. And some of the laws we're talking about are, for instance, engraving serial numbers, keeping a sales record, whether or not a person who is a drug user can possess a firearm. And the Supreme Court says, no, those laws can remain in effect for now. Thomas Jefferson said back in 1823, he said, if there's ever a time when you are questioning the constitutional interpretation of something, you need to recollect the spirit that was manifested in the debate that surrounded the creation of the Constitution of the Bill of Rights, because that would give you the meaning of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, right? Don't try to squeeze a different meaning out of it. And that was brought back up in Bruin, right? We saw the Supreme Court say there has to be historical precedent. So the fact that the Supreme Court with Missouri right now is essentially saying, no, these laws can remain in effect. They're not following their own decision, and they're not following what the founders wanted. And the reason, Jesse, that this can persist, this type of infringement upon the Second Amendment, it's because they have made it taboo to be a gun owner, right? And the New York Times, I think they encapsulated it perfectly, because in their article about this, they write that there were several unusual provisions of this law. You know what the unusual provision they're referring to is? The fact that a citizen can sue for $50,000 if they can prove that their Second Amendment right has been violated. Why is that unusual?
Ugh, this country. All right, what's going on with Missouri versus Biden? Because that sucks too. Why do our Supreme Court justices suck? What's wrong with Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and these other losers?
You know, Jesse, they keep telling us, they say you got a conservative Supreme Court. And I am like, where? Where is this conservative Supreme Court? So basically, the Supreme Court ruled that for now, a lower court decision that said the Biden administration cannot collude and talk to these social media companies and these big tech companies is paused. And it was only Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas who dissented and said, hold on a second. A lower court has already found that they colluded to censor, especially conservatives, in light of the pandemic. And we're going to let them continue this. And again, I bring back what I just spoke about with Thomas Jefferson. If ever there is a time when a court is questioning whether or not the government is abridging of freedom, they should always, their knee-jerk reaction should be to side with the freedom aspect, right? The constitutional amendment, and then later place restrictions. If they get it wrong, they can add the restrictions back. But the fact that they want to say, if we get it wrong, we'll take some of the restrictions away, is not the way that this is supposed to work.
Yeah. Gosh, what a country we have right now. Brianna, thank you. Come back soon.
Thank you.
All right. We need to talk to Mike Baker about some things. Because Mike's CIA was CIA, one of the good ones, not one of the crappy data nerds. And we have many foreign policy things we have to dig into. We'll do that with Mike next. Before we get to that, let's do something important. Let's talk about that crappy film that's on the inside of your car windshield. We all have it. I'm not judging you. The streaks, the film, the kids touch it. Even if no one touches it, your body puts off things, your car puts off things, and you end up with a film. And how do you clean the inside of your windshield? You don't. Or if you do, you do this thing where we all, because no angles, right, it doesn't work. Well, that's how it used to be. Not anymore. Windshield, wow, it's so freaking cool. The simplicity and brilliance of this, essentially, it's a magnet. You clean the inside of your car windshield from the outside. You clean them both at the same time. And finally, for the first time ever, you can see clearly. Go. WindshieldWow.com. Promo code Jesse gets you a special discount. I make my sons do it now. WindshieldWow.com. Promo code Jesse. We'll be back. Have you heard about the President's Daily Brief? My friend Mike Baker does it, former CIA ops. Again, not one of the data nerds. Ops! Well, what is it? How about 6 a.m. every day in a little condensed 20-minute podcast, you get up to date on all the goings-on in the world and you get to sound smarter than all your friends. That's the President's Daily Brief. Go download it. Subscribe. Joining me now, Mike Baker, former CIA operations officer, and of course, the host of President's Daily Brief. Okay, Mike, I'm going to rely on you for some things I can't get elsewhere. Mainly, when you talk about Israel, Hamas, Russia, Ukraine, what you get is a lot of emotion. I don't care about people's emotions. I want to talk tactically. I want to talk about things on the ground. Where is this Israel-Hamas thing?
Yeah, and no, it's a great point. And that's the problem we've got right now is everybody's kind of leading with their hopes, you know, and their feelings, as opposed to you know, the reality of what this conflict is and how long it's been going on for. The current administration, there's a lot of different layers to this, but the current administration, the Biden administration, has spent the past couple of weeks tap dancing around the issue of Iran. And it's caused a lot of, you know, questions. And I think the bottom line is, for the Biden administration, because they've spent their entire time in office focused on a soft approach to Iran. I mean, they came in with that understanding. They staffed their Iran-focused positions. The U.S. envoy, Robert Malley, who, by the way, is suspended and had his security clearances pulled. All those positions were filled with people who were disdainful of the maximum pressure approach and promised a new way of dealing with Iran. And so for them now to turn around and say, Iran's responsible for what's happened in this horrible brutality that we saw from Hamas, which is the Iranian proxy, on 7th of October, for them to do that would be a complete U-turn and an admission of a serious foreign policy mistake. And I think they're very reluctant, obviously, to go down that road. But any long-lasting peace, any solution to this conflict, and any stability that we may see for the long term in the Middle East, you have to deal with the Iranian regime, right? To get there. It's just, there's no other path.
Mike, can you lay this out for me? Because what I see is nations with different priorities. You just mentioned our priority. Doesn't matter whether I like it or not. Our priority is to try to soften things up with Iran. Israel has a priority. They're going to respond to that terrorist attack. They're probably going to be a ground invasion. Iran has a priority. It's different than all those. So if Israel goes in Hezbollah, Iran starts getting frosty up north, are we going to step in there? Because it sure sounds like we are going to step in there. There are two carrier groups over there, and they're not just having fun in the sun.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think, look, there have already been, in the past week and a half, there have already been over a dozen drone and missile attacks on U.S. facilities with U.S. personnel. And the Pentagon's own admission yesterday, they were slow to get there, but they said, yeah, we've had 30 military casualties so far. As a result of these strikes on our facilities that are being done by Iranian proxies that are sponsored by Iran. Again, we keep going back to this same dead horse that I keep kicking. And yes, you're right. We've got two carrier strike groups out there, the Ford and the Eisenhower, right? And we've deployed additional squadrons of air assets. And Biden came out in a press conference and said, I've warned the Ayatollah, you know, if you keep up these attacks essentially on our troops, we're gonna respond. Well, so how many attacks are necessary before we respond? Because we've been hit 14 different times. That doesn't even count the 30 plus citizens that we lost, US citizens that were killed during the slaughter on the 7th of October. So as much as nobody wants to have an escalating conflict, Iran is escalating the conflict, right? That's the reality of it. So I'm not sure how we rationalize not responding to Iran and at the same time, you know, calling for a ceasefire, which essentially is kicking the can down the road, asking for the status quo. And we know the status quo just leads to more conflict because that's been the case for the past several decades.
Mike, why is Iran being so overt and so belligerent? As you mentioned, the attacks, they don't even really try to cover it up anymore. Everyone knows it's them. Right. They don't hide the fact that it's them. But they're not, you know, they're not poking Yemen here. They're not poking some jerkwater third world country. They're poking us. Why are they poking us so hard?
Yeah, well, look, it all comes down, again, it's complex, but in a way you can simplify it. And basically the Iranian regime, the mullahs, not the Iranian people. People always get torqued up when you say, you know, Iran, or you talk about the, you know, the Chinese regime. We're not talking about the people, we're talking about the people in charge. And so for the regime, for the mullahs, their objective here, they've been very clear about it, as have their proxies, including Hamas, it's the destruction of Israel. That's what they want. They are offended every morning that Israel exists. And they do everything they can to destabilize that region, and they have built up and maintained these terrorist proxy groups, Hamas, Hezbollah to the north, right? The Houthis, they around Israel, and that is their objective, to destroy Israel. So, you know, unless they have a sea change of belief, they're going to continue down that path. They're going to continue trying to do this. And we also know that they are obviously working to develop their nuclear weapons capability. So at some point, this becomes a much more difficult equation. If what we're talking about is trying to degrade the Iranian regime so that they stop this nonsense, you know, again, I don't know how any path to peace is possible long term, which means a better life for the Palestinian residents, right? For the Palestinians, for those in the Gaza and West Bank. I don't know how you get to that peace with the Iranian regime in place, right? And continuing to sponsor Hamas and Hezbollah and the others who destabilize the region. I mean, one of the reasons they did this to begin with was because they did not want a normalization of relations between Israel and the Saudis. And, you know, so 7 October certainly put an end to that.
Mike, let's final question here, because I could keep you forever and pick your brain about this stuff. But there's something tactically that I can't seem to shake. It's really, really bothering me. Okay, from Israel's perspective, okay, they're bombing the living crap out of Gaza, and everyone knows that it's fine, whatever. But eventually, they want boots on the ground there. They have to go in. You can only do so much from a jet. Eventually, they have to go in.
Right.
Why didn't they go in right away? The longer you go in, the longer they delay this, the more time you're giving a well-funded by Iran Hamas more to set up a kill box in Gaza under every single pile of rubbles and IED. Why this delay? Every second they delay, that place gets deadlier, not more pacified.
Yeah, I don't dispute that at all. From an operational perspective, you know, you got to get off the X, right? But there are leading up to that, there are some operational concerns. They had to, you know, they had to develop the resources. They had to ensure that they had those in place. They had to, you know, look at the intelligence that they had related to the hostages. The hostages are a unique and certainly, you know, complex aspect of this whole operation. But they were also playing beat the clock in a sense, knowing that it would take very little time for international pressure to turn on Israel,
yeah,
right? And say, look, we've got civilian casualties. The terribly depressing part here is that Hamas counted on that. And Hamas, that's why they embed themselves with citizens. It's because they want, I hate to say this, but their currency are dead Palestinians. That's how they push the narrative. That's how they get the international world to turn on Israel. And sure enough, it's happened. Despite how horrific 7 October was, it's happened remarkably quickly. Now you've got the White House. You've got President Biden even saying, well, you know, we want to get those hostages out, and then we can talk ceasefire. Again, a ceasefire gives you nothing but the status quo. And if you have the status quo, the only winner here at this point would be Iran.
It is the President's Daily Brief podcast. You see what I mean? Go download it. Subscribe. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it, brother. Come back, please.
Yes. Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Of course. All right. Gavin Newsom. He wasn't in California yesterday. He was in China? He's been in China? Why? Let's talk to John Phillips about that for a minute next. Before we do that, let's do this. I avoided talking about something right off the top of the show. We could have done the whole show on it, honestly. But I don't even know what to say anymore. You heard me talk about it briefly with Chip. $600 billion added to the national debt in 1 month. 1 month. Before that, it was $1 trillion added in 3 months, and everyone looked around and thought, oh my gosh, I've never seen anything like it. And then we added another $600 billion just in the month of September. Please tell me you've taken steps to protect yourself financially for what's coming. Oxford Gold. It's time now. Not next week. Now. Gold coins or silver coins. I don't give a crap what color they are. Get them delivered to your home. Please get some precious metals in your retirement account. You will thank me for that. Oxford Gold handles all this for you, and they're just wonderful about it. They're wonderful about it. They're the only people I trust. JesseKellyGold.com is where you go. But go, and sooner rather than later. JesseKellyGold.com. We'll be back.
But I want to applaud the Biden administration, and on the basis of the engagement I had today with members of the Xi administration, President Xi himself, I want to applaud his willingness to reconcile those differences, people-to-people exchange. The fact he's meeting with the governor of California at the subnational level, I think, is indicative of a thaw.
Why is the governor of California actually in China? I mean, we all know, but... let's talk to John about it. Joining me now, my friend John Phillips of the Great John Phillips Show. John, maybe he got lost, but man, I was looking at my map here on my phone, and China looks so far away from California. What's going on?
Yeah, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up going back too, because you end up going to China as a politician, and then an hour later, you're hungry to go back. So there might be a second trip, Gavin Newsom. Look, this is not good politics for a governor of California internally. Don't forget, it was Nancy Pelosi, of all people, who is a relative hawk on China, who not only went to Taiwan with a delegation of members of Congress to be critical of the communist Chinese government, but she did so expressly against the wishes of President Joe Biden, his Department of State, and literally the entire executive branch. Now, she did that for a bunch of reasons, one of which is there's a significant Chinese population in the state of California that has been victimized in one way or another by this repressive regime. And she knew that if she wasn't tough on China, she'd receive political blowback in her district. Well, Gavin Newsom comes from San Francisco. Those same people that wanted her to go be tough on China are the same people that voted for Gavin Newsom for mayor, lieutenant governor, and then governor. So he's not doing himself any favors in the state of California by going to China and talking about climate change. Why he's doing this is because he wants to look presidential. He wants to look like he's going on these international trips. He's being treated like any foreign head of state would. As a presidential candidate, governors are frequently criticized for not having any experience when it comes to international relations. They're good at state policy, but they don't know about interacting with foreign governments, particularly the superpowers that we're engaged with on a variety of issues. By Gavin Newsom going to China and going to Israel in their time of crisis, what he's trying to do is present himself not as a state politician, not as someone who worries about water policy and deals with Indian tribes and those sorts of things, but as a man who is capable of leading a major nation like the United States. This is all about him positioning himself ahead of Kamala Harris.
That actually leads me perfectly to this, John. You know, I have a pretty wife, very, very pretty. And when we go out, if I use the restroom or sometimes even while I'm standing right there, there's a guy who's going to tell her she has pretty eyes. And all that stuff's fine. There's no bother. But there's a limit to how far he can take that. If he tells her she has pretty eyes, it's fine. If he reaches over and puts his hand on her rear end, I'm going to knock him out. This is a little forward for Gavin Newsom. Joe Biden's well aware he wants to be president. Going to China acting like you're already running for president, how's that not a bridge too far for the Biden people? Isn't that putting the hand on the small of the back? Isn't that getting a little too forward?
Well, you would think so. However, I've talked to many people who are in the know in these Democratic circles, and I get the same answer every single time I talk to them. The Biden team, the people around Grampy Joe, do not regard Gavin Newsom as a threat. That Gavin Newsom is not going to take Grampy Joe on in a Democratic primary. The person that this is a declaration of war towards is Kamala Harris. What Gavin Newsom is doing is he's positioning himself to be the main alternative if Joe Biden were to have a heart attack and roll a seven, and the Democrats suddenly need a new nominee at the 11th hour. He's essentially running a shadow campaign for the presidency, so he would be up and running the moment that Joe Biden passes away or says he has a medical emergency that will prohibit him from running for office. I hate to use this analogy because we're talking about him and Kamala Harris, but in many ways, those two are working the same corner. They're selling the same product. They have the same strategist. And he has to figure out a way to position himself ahead of her, given the fact that she would be the natural successor to Joe Biden, and the Democratic Party would have tremendous amounts of pressure on it to get behind her as the sitting vice president. He needs to figure out a way, and this is what he's doing with all of these actions, to say, nope, she's not the easiest replacement for Biden. I am. Get behind me.
Yeah. Yeah, she needs him to stay behind her, and I'm confident she is comfortable with him there. John of the John Phillips Show, thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have Light in the Mood next. It's Hillary's birthday. We're going to celebrate like only we can. Hang on. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And did you know today is Hillary Clinton's birthday? Isn't that exciting? 76 years she's been murdering people on this earth. And in honor of Hillary Clinton's birthday, we put together this little montage.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Hillary accidentally bumped into me. And she very civilly said, pardon me.
We need to take a break. We just need to have a word from our sponsor. Okay.
Washington is broken. The truth is, too many politicians are totally controlled by special interests and lobbyists. We're going to make America great again. I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
He approves the message.
Why would you play a commercial from my opponent in the middle of our interview?
He paid me in steaks. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Mrs. Clinton. We should stay in touch. What's the best way to reach you? Email?
You could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? This is not the outcome we wanted or we worked so hard for. And I'm sorry that we did not win this election. This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald J. Trump is now President of the United States. President of the United States.
For what a great honor to be able to introduce for the first time ever anywhere the 45th President of the United States of America, Donald
Trump on the shoulder. You adjust the microphone as you tall, man.
Ah, makes me smile. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.